Governor, thank you very much for having us in your office, and Happy New Year.
Well, thank you, Dennis. Nice to be with you, and Happy New Year to you.
With a new administration and a new Congress, do you want that new Congress and the incoming administration to have a replacement for Obamacare ready before repealing it? Because that would certainly affect the decisions that Georgia makes about Medicaid and many other things.
Well, you know, that is always preferable, that you have a replacement of whatever you're going to do in place and ready to go. However, our state is not in the posture that some states happen to be in. We did not expand our Medicaid rolls, so therefore we're not in jeopardy of having to go back and take people off the rolls by some change at the federal level. We likewise did not establish a state exchange, so therefore we're not responsible for that. And that may be one of the, where one of the major areas comes from.
But Democratic leaders, including Minority Leader Stacey Abrams in the House, have argued that one of the reasons we still have so many people uninsured is that we have not expanded Medicaid.
Well, you know, it's a question of how much money are you going to be able to spend. One of the hopes that I have is that in whatever comes out of Washington, they will give the state more flexibility in terms of how we spend our money. We did not expand, and some of the states like Arkansas that did, they found out that when they put their additional Medicaid population on their state health benefit plan, that CMS said, well, that's fine, well and good, but that does not provide as much coverage as traditional Medicaid did provide. And they had to then go back and buy a wraparound policy. I think that highlights the fact that we need to restructure and look at the benefit package under Medicaid, and we need to be able to hopefully continue to pay our provider community. Now, that's one thing that will be in this year's budget.
That's what I was going to ask you. Are you going to propose a restructuring of Medicaid this year?
Well, not a major restructuring. There are several areas, one of those being in the primary care and OBGYN physicians reimbursement rates. This is a continuation of trying to keep that reimbursement rate at a level equivalent to Medicare reimbursement rates in 2014. So that will be in our budget this year.
And that will help the providers. But as far as hospitals go, do we have time to take a wait-and-see approach to what the feds will do under the new administration when it comes to Obamacare, when we have, because of not expanding Medicaid, not drawn down a lot of the federal dollars that some of these hospitals say they need?
Well, you know, that's always an argument that some people want to make. Every hospital and every medical provider will tell you that Medicaid reimbursement rates is less than their cost. So how do you benefit the overall picture if you're taking on more people and your compensation for taking them into your program is less than your cost? That doesn't keep the hospital solvent.
But there's still federal money that we're not getting.
Well, that's another argument that I think you're going to find that Georgia was very wise not to expand Medicaid and not to have a state-run health exchange.
You said you want more flexibility. Specifically, what would you like the Trump administration to give Georgia when it comes to health care?
Well, I'm not going to try to dictate to them what they need to do. There are some key principles, and the one that I think is most important is give states the flexibility to spend not just their money that they're putting into Medicaid, but also the federal portion that is coming back to us. Give us greater flexibility. Don't make us have to go and beg CMS for policy changes or coverage changes or reimbursement changes. It is a very slow process when you have to do that. So I am hopeful. Now, some would say just block grant the money to the state, and that may very well be one of the options that they choose. But anything that would give the state more flexibility to design a Medicaid delivery system that meets the needs of their state and meets the needs of their citizens will be welcome.
Are you confident that whatever happens, the more than 900,000 people in Georgia who are now on the exchange will be able to maintain coverage, will not fall through the cracks?
I'm not going to make those kind of promises. We saw where we got when Obama made the promise that if you like this, you're going to be able to keep your doctor and your health care. And that did not pan out to be true. I think we have to be very careful.
But still, there are more people covered than there were before.
Well, any time that you ask the taxpayers of this state to pay part of somebody's health care bill, you would expect people are going to take advantage of that.
You said last week that instead of pushing for an overhaul of the education funding formula, which is something that you've wanted to do, you'd focus on a plan for the state to intervene in the operations of chronically underperforming schools. Now, the voters said no to the opportunity school district idea that you had proposed last year. Why come back again with a state intervention plan?
Well, I said all along that we ought to tackle the most serious problems in public education. And the most serious problems are that we have chronically failing schools, and we have an ever-increasing number of students who are being required by law to attend those schools. Last year, we were talking about 127 chronically failing schools. Just recently, we've gotten the statistics in, and it's now 153 chronically failing schools. We were talking about 68,000 children in those schools, and now it is close to 89,000 students who are being required to attend chronically failing schools. That is the top priority of education reform. So I intend to focus on that this year. We have a great working relationship with the House and the Senate leadership and the committees that are responsible for that, and I believe we'll have a good piece of legislation before the session's over with.
Does it have to be an either-or, though? I mean, you mentioned the numbers of chronically failing schools, and yet you have thousands of schools throughout the state in districts that are saying, under the old funding formula, we're struggling as it is. So why not do both?
Well, it's a question of money. How much money do you have available? What you're going to see us doing is focusing on elementary schools, because of the chronically failing schools, the vast majority of those schools are elementary schools. So if we can begin to fix the problems of children who can't read, of children who can't do basic math by the time they leave elementary school, we can begin to solve some of the long-term issues of high school dropouts, of those who wind up in our prisons, and those who wind up on our welfare rolls.
The state continues to struggle, Governor, with an epidemic of opioid addiction. Senator Renee Unterman is proposing several bills, including one that would ensure that all physicians are part of the state's prescription drug monitoring program. Is that a good starting point for you?
I think the physician monitoring program is the step in the right direction, and we would like to see as much participation as possible because we have a significant problem with this issue. I've just gotten information recently that there are some counties in our state where if you add the number of prescriptions of opioids, it represents two prescriptions for every citizen in their county. Obviously, there are people coming in from outside that account for those numbers. Now, we have, in an executive order, authorized the over-the-counter purchase of preventive drugs that will be able to counteract an opioid.
Naloxone, which is an emergency thing.
Yes, and we will ask the General Assembly to put that executive order language into a statute so that it becomes permanent.
Is there anything you can do with the drug monitoring program to make sure that more physicians are covered by it, or is there anything you can do to say this is mandatory?
Well, we're going to explore all of those options. I would say that we need cooperation from the medical community itself, because they are given great latitude under our law to discipline and to regulate their own membership.
I was going to get to that. We have a state medical board.
Absolutely.
Shouldn't it be doing more?
Well, we need the cooperation, voluntary cooperation, of everybody in the medical delivery system, because if prescription drug overdoses are a significant problem, which it appears they are, and maybe even bigger than some of the illegal drugs that are being consumed, then it's going to take those who are within the legal community, both the prescribing physician and the pharmacist who's filling the prescription. We need the cooperation of all of them. And I might add that in order to get our executive order in place, the pharmacy board was very willing to cooperate in that, and I thank them for that.
You mentioned voluntary cooperation, which, of course, everyone agrees would work best. But is there anything the state can do in terms of enforcement, some kind of hammer, if you will, on folks who either overprescribe medications or prescribe them too easily?
Well, I think there is. As you may know, we've had great success when our state became the operation for pill mills. It had left other states and had come to Georgia. We passed legislation that I think has virtually eliminated that, working with law enforcement officers. And, you know, if it comes to that, then we can certainly do the same thing and expand it into this area. I would hope that we can have cooperation from all the parties involved, including the medical community, to be able to just do it short of having to bring in that kind of a hammer.
In addition to asking the legislature to make the executive order on naloxone into law, is there anything else that you would propose in terms of opioids?
No, I think that's the first and most important starting point.
Real quickly, we've got about 30 seconds.
All right.
Quick yes or no on this one. Campus carry, backers of that idea, which you vetoed last time, will bring it back. If they come back with a bill that says we won't allow, even with concealed carry permits, people to bring guns into, say, college or university daycare centers. In other words, if they carve out places where guns would still not be allowed, would that be satisfactory for you? Would you consider signing such a bill?
Well, I have given indications last session of areas of exceptions that I felt like their bill should have incorporated.
Yeah, and daycare centers.
And it did not incorporate those exception areas. I won't speculate as to what we will do this time. I thought a very well-worded veto message that I hope everybody read. I think it sets out the historical perspective of that and what I consider to be the status of the state of Georgia. I'm not closing the door on anything, and I don't speculate as to what legislation might look like. We'll wait and see what they do.
But it's not an absolute no. It would depend on what the language is. Is that what I'm hearing?
I think you have to always say it depends on what the language is. That's what the law is the language.
Georgia Governor Nathan Deal. Governor, thank you so much for this time. We really appreciate it. Again, Happy New Year.
Thank you, Dennis. Nice to be with you.